This program is brought to you by Emory University.
This book report is brought to you by Emory Report.
And this contribution is by William Gruber, professor of English, and the title is His Sprawling, Irreverent Spirit, and it's a profile of Professor Floyd C. Watkins. His nickname for me was Old Windbreaker, and each morning when I turned the key in my door, I heard the slow, raspy drawl, "Hello, Old Windbreaker." Floyd Watkins had the office across the hall from mine on the third floor of what is now North Callaway. And no matter how early I arrived at the office after dropping off my two daughters at school, Floyd was there before me, typewriter clattering. But his door was always open, and so for all the years I was assistant professor, my workday began by hearing the most powerful member of the English department insult me, a gesture that I soon came to understand was actually his way of inviting me to pop in and say hello. Floyd knew his own mind and was not afraid to speak it. He was fiercely opposed to what he sensed was the backsliding of literary scholars away from their true role as servants of art and artists. He thought that the profession had been corrupted by identity politics, and once when we were talking about what it would take to get tenure, he told me only half in jest that he hoped to see the day when publishing an article in PMLA, the Journal of the Modern Language Association, counted against a candidate. Another time, on the occasion of his first conversation with the person hired to be the department's new chair, Floyd made it a point to tell him that he had voted against him. This statement was so coarse, so gauche, that Floyd so characteristically unconcerned with anything but telling the truth, that it might have been spoken by Hamlet. Not the stagey, indecisive Hamlet, but the real Hamlet, courageous and purposeful, even in spite of his own best interests, as Lytton Strachey once wrote, who called his father's ghost Old Truepenny, who forged his uncle's signature, and who fought Laertes, ranted in the grave, and lugged the guts into the neighbor room. At the same time, Floyd was the most generous and considerate of men. He took pleasure in talking with his neighbors in Ball Ground, as well as with his colleagues in the English department. He told me more than once that he preferred the former. Each year he took his students in Southern literature on tours of North Georgia so they could experience firsthand some of the landscapes that gave rise to writers and their work. Twice I was invited to go on these excursions. We went to Tallulah Falls near the end of the Appalachian Trail. We toured the marble quarries Floyd had known growing up near the town of Ball Ground, and we drove blue highways through James Dickey country. Driving through hills whose features were hidden beneath drifts of kudzu, foliage so deep and lush you could almost sense the plants growing, Floyd told me stories about his ancestors. "The Watkinses don't have easy deaths," he said, with almost no conversational run-up, and quoted from Dickey's poem about invasive vines. And I'm quoting, "Up telephone poles, which rear, half out of leafage, as though they would shriek, like things smothered by their own green, mindless, killable ghosts." It's hard for me to believe that I have now spent almost as many years at Emory as had Floyd Watkins when I first came to Atlanta, but such is the chronology. Floyd began his career teaching at Emory in 1949, and I joined the faculty of the Department of English in the fall of 1980. I came to campus for a job interview in May of that year, and after I spent the day meeting with department faculty and representatives of the administration, I was taken out to dinner. In those days, spouses were considered to be an essential part of any social event. It was my first real glimpse into Southern hospitality. So the dinner party that evening consisted of the department chair, Bill Dillingham, his wife Elizabeth, Floyd and Anna Watkins, and me. We met at what was then one of the few good places to eat in downtown Decatur, a building that had been converted into a restaurant from an old department store. The dinner was not actually an interview, but it was clear that I was being tested, and at about the time the entrees arrived, the women dropped out of the conversation as if on cue. There was nothing awkward or sexist about this, Anna Watkins and Elizabeth Dillingham were good friends, and they clearly preferred to ignore the men in preference to their own subjects of interest. The three of us moved in through light academic conversation to more personal topics. By the time the waiter brought the pecan pie, Floyd had begun to tell jokes. The evening might well have ended there. Later that night, back in my hotel room, replaying in my mind the events of the day, I remember thinking that the sharing of jokes meant that whatever test I had been given, I had apparently passed. But after the pie, there was one more bourbon and some more small talk about departmental business, and then Floyd, who had known Bill ever since he was a student in his classes in the 1950s, asked Bill how he wrote. That was in an era when many faculty still gave their handwritten letters and manuscripts to secretaries for typing. Floyd almost always composed everything on a Royal Manual typewriter, and he was curious to know whether his department chair wrote in longhand or a machine. Bill said he didn't like to use a typewriter. He did all of his writing with a pen on a tablet. "Then what do you do," Floyd said in that frustrating, retarded drawl, "when the words come out too fast for you to keep up?"
The preceding program is copyrighted by Emory University. Please visit us at emory.edu.